It is late July, 1899, another scorching New York summer. In Joseph Pulitzer's office in the world's golden domed headquarters, Pulitzer and his head of operations are reviewing budgets and crunching the numbers.
I don't know how it got this bad this quickly.
I do. We got spoiled by those wartime circulation numbers. It's a different game now.
The Spanish-American War has been over for nearly a year. Pulitzer's World and William Randolph Hearst's journal spent hundreds of thousands of dollars competing during the build-up to military intervention in Cuba. They put dozens of correspondents up in fancy hotels and paid them lavish salaries. The actual war ended in a flash with a decisive American victory. The papers returned to business as usual, but their pre-war spending left them with six-figure deficits. Even worse, the pace of news during peacetime has gotten pretty sluggish. The big story lately is evidence of corruption in the New York City mayor's office. And in Tammany Hall-era New York, that barely counts as news at all. Pulitzer walks to the window. His waistcoat flutters behind him as he paces the room anxiously.
What else can we possibly cut to eliminate our $350,000 deficit?
Well, you're not going to like this, but I did wonder about the newsies. You know, we've let them have a pretty sweet deal for a long time.
Pulitzer sees one of the boys hawking the journal on the street below.
Boss Kroger on the take. All the latest on the Tammany Hall bribery scandal, only in the New York Journal.
Kids? Your big idea is to get money from kids?
Look, if we charge them 60 cents per 100 papers, not 50 cents... well, that could actually bring us another $900,000 a year.
If they go along with it, that is.
They're orphans. They're runaways. Delivering the world is the only thing these kids know.
But our readers might revolt.
Reluctantly, Pulitzer gives the okay. He feels a familiar twinge in his lower back, one of his chronic aches and pains. Pulitzer senses a storm gathering on the horizon. At least Pulitzer knows that once he moves on the newsboys, his rival Hearst will have to follow suit. In New York's competitive media landscape, these two men have to match each other stride for stride, and they will do anything to keep their rival from getting ahead. No target is too big or too small. We get support from Airbnb. Staying in an Airbnb is often one of my favorite parts of a trip, especially on business travel. Instead of slogging to another hotel and waiting in line after you've been driving or flying all day, there is nothing better than landing in a place that, well, really feels like a home away from home. Maybe you've stayed in an Airbnb before and thought to yourself, you know, this actually seems pretty doable. Maybe my place could be an Airbnb. Well, I'm here to tell you it could be. You could be sitting on an Airbnb and not even know it. It might be as simple as starting with your spare room, or maybe even your whole place when you're away. Say you and your family are headed away for a much-deserved spring break. Well, why not Airbnb your place and make some extra money towards the trip? Win-win. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm David Brown. In our last episode, Hearst and Pulitzer went toe-to-toe to get the scoop on the war in Cuba. In this episode, we're taking a close-up look at a crisis of their own making, one that nearly cost Hearst and Pulitzer their grip on the country's first media empires. Instead of pitting them against each other, this crisis would see the two media moguls finding rare common ground. You're listening to Episode 5, Newsies. A young boy, Jimmy, hustles down the street. He's one of a group of kids wearing knickers and a wool cap, even in the summer heat. There's a wagon stopped on the corner, filled with bundles of newspapers and surrounded by newsies waiting for their supply. Soon, Jimmy has nudged his way to the front over the protests of his colleague.
Hey, watch it. Give me a stack, boss.
2 bits.
Jimmy fishes 50 cents out of his pocket and grabs his bundle. He finds a quiet corner of the street. He tears open the stack and grabs a paper to give it a quick read. He's looking for any and all angles to help sales on his corner, 6th Avenue and Bleecker. If he's savvy enough, he'll double his money and go home that night with a dollar. His eye immediately lands on a headline on page 3 about a mystery rock. It doesn't take Jimmy long to whip up a pitch. The other newsies are doing the same. They throw their papers into their shoulder bags and disperse out onto the streets. Their cries are like a public address system for the whole city.
Mystery object in East River, maybe a rock from Mars. Hear what a scientist says. Prize pony gets loose in Central Park, takes a bite out of the mayor. Read all about it.
Ex-girlfriend of headless torso murderer says he contacted her from beyond the grave.
In the late 19th century, papers come out in 8 or 10 separate editions throughout the day. They can't be allowed to languish in stacks. Street corner machines and newsstands don't exist yet. So the headlines of the day are delivered by the young boys hawking ink-stained bundles of newsprint. Who better suited to the task than high-energy, hard-scrabble New York kids? At this point, child labor laws barely exist. The idea of childhood as we know it today doesn't really exist either. People see kids as miniature adults, ready to work, not delicate creatures needing special protection. Just 6% of the population graduate from high school. Most boys are working by the time they hit puberty. Some newsies are as young as 6 years old. Poor, often uneducated, homeless, or both, these kids are nevertheless crucial links in the newspaper distribution chain. For the kids, the economics are dead simple. A stack is 100 papers, and a newsie pays a half cent per copy. Since each paper retails for a penny, every newsie's going for double or nothing. This is why they hawk so hard for so long each day. Sell the whole bundle. Well, it's a 100% profit. And the sales pitch matters, too. The juicier the story, the faster they'll sell out their stashes of papers. In the end, everyone profits. A lot of times, they embellish what's printed in the papes, that shorthand for papers in the newsies' quirky slang. They twist or even make up headlines just to move product. After all, they're on the hook for any papers left unsold. Tragedies involving families or young women are the most surefire way to get passers-by to part with their pennies. Comedian W.C. Fields worked as a newsie at the turn of the century. He had a reliable comeback for angry customers who thought they'd been ripped off by a headline for a story that wasn't in the paper.
Printing error. That copy is 1 in a million. A real collector's edition.
And with that assurance, he'd turn to the next customer. On this muggy July morning in 1899, the newsies gather in a back alley to buy their stacks from a wholesaler. It doesn't take long for an unwelcome discovery to spread among their ranks. Prices for their 100 paper bundles have risen overnight from 50 cents to 60. During the war, the newsies worked long hours, sometimes 18-hour days, hustling papers for Hearst and Pulitzer. Now, the price hike feels like a slap in the face.
Hey, can you get a load of this? It ain't right. Already we gotta pay for the papes we don't sell. Yeah, we gotta do something. The World and the Journal are the only ones who raise prices. It just ain't right. Come on. Kid Blink just called a meeting at the park. We got time before the first edition. Let's go.
Down at City Hall Park, a tussle-haired, ink-smudged boy is standing on a wooden milk crate. He stands all of 4'10", hails from Brooklyn, and wears a patch over one blind eye. His real name is Lewis Bowlett, but the wisecracking newsies took one look at him and gave him the nickname Kid Blink. Along with the kid, there's Boots McAleenan, Young Mush, Crutchy Morris, Racetrack Higgins, and Bob the Indian. Kid Blink tugs on his suspenders. At all of 14 years old, the kid is flying by the seat of his pants.
Friends and fellow workers, have you seen what they're trying to do to us newsies? It's an outrage, I tell you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Telling me. This is a time when we gotta stick together like glue. These guys are making millions off our backs, off every copy we sell.
Well, what's your plan?
I'll tell you, the only thing these fat cats will understand is if we take away their money. Without us, they've got no chance. Without us, they're out of business. We gotta go out on strike.
Hell yeah, let's show them.
We love these jobs, but we gotta send a message. Everybody who's with me, say strike.
A show of hands makes the strike vote nearly unanimous. And just like that, a plan is in motion. Even though they have no official union and no laws protecting them, nearly 5,000 newsies plan to walk off the job at the end of the week. In the run-up to the strike, the Journal and the World cover the story. On the eve of the walkout, the newsies have to hawk headlines about their own crusade. While naturally the stories have a pro-management tilt, the newsies manage to spin things the other way.
The World raises prices. Newsboys set strike date. Read all about it. The Journal squeezes the newsies' walkout plan for midnight.
Before long, they're bending the ears of sympathetic customers. The strike works. In its first 3 days, circulation of the Journal and the World drops by more than half. Inside the Journal offices on Park Row, Hearst brushes off the short-term effects. He seems oblivious to the potential downside of a strike. Growing up, Hearst saw his father bust unions at the copper mines he owned out west. So the Journal boss assumes it's only a matter of time before his young workers cave. One July afternoon, he's sitting in his office at the Journal with managing editor Sam Chamberlain.
These kids aren't folding, Chief.
They'll come around.
I don't know. We should think about meeting them halfway. I mean, for us, it's pennies. But for them, they have nothing to lose by keeping up this fight. I hear they want to shut down the Brooklyn Bridge with a protest.
And how are they getting up onto the bridge? By tricycle?
I say we get them in here for a meeting.
Not yet. We need to draw a line right here. They can't just do whatever they want.
Want to bet?
What the adults running the papers fail to understand is that the kids can do whatever they want. And they're organized. They decide to hit another key link in the distribution chain. This time, the wholesalers who sell them the papers. Let's face it, after a night with drinks, it can be hard to bounce back the next morning. But let me tell you, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, it's with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for that rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. I have a friend who had to go to a major conference the night before. Well, you know how these pre-conference cocktail sessions can go. But he cracked open a bottle of ZBiotics before that first drink. The next day, he got up feeling ready to give that presentation his 100%. Head on over to ZBiotics.com/BW to get 15% off your first order when you use BW at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/BW and make sure to use the code BW at checkout for 15% off. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn.
You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
It's 6 a.m. in Long Island City, a section of Queens just across the East River from Manhattan. A horse-drawn paper wagon is just rolling into position, creaking as it wheels across the cobblestone street. The driver parks on a street corner. He's expecting the newsies to line up and grab their stacks, as they always do. But today, Kid Blink has put the word out to enact a different plan. Dozens of boys have assembled, ready for action. They form a circle around the wagon and confront the driver.
Hey, Mac, is that the Whirl in the Journal you got there?
What's it to you?
We just wondered how much you're charging.
60 cents for 100, you know that. Now come on, buy your papers a scram.
How about you put it on our tab?
Come on, boys.
The newsies descend on the cart, grabbing papers by the armful.
Let's flip it over.
Hey, what are you doing? Come back with those papers.
Nice try, pal. These papers are going in the river.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Let's get out of here. Yeah.
You can't get away with this.
We just did, buddy. Read all about it.
Kid Blink leads the newsies away from the wagon, and then they jubilantly, defiantly run to Queensbridge Park and toss the bundles of papers over a low wall right into the East River. It doesn't take long for Hearst and Pulitzer to hear about stacks of their hot-off-the-presses papers floating in the river. And Hearst is furious. He vows to punish the kids. Pulitzer doesn't admit it to the people around him, but he feels ashamed. Perhaps he thinks the kids gave him what he deserved. Still, his sense of law and order doesn't like the newsies' mob-like approach. And both newspapermen know their empires are being undermined by this strike. It's taking more of a toll than either thought it would. A week and a half into the walkout, Hearst and Pulitzer decide on a counterattack. Not together, mind you. The two competitors have still never met or spoken. But once again, in their long rivalry, they wind up following the same playbook without comparing notes. The Journal and the World have often taken the police to task in print for their rough treatment of striking workers. Suddenly, with the issue now on their own doorsteps, they've reversed course. They run daily editorials praising the cops for breaking up packs of protesting newsies. A dangerous pattern is now in place. Newsies swarm in the streets and hold impromptu rallies that disrupt city life.
They can't tell us to leave this park. This park belongs to all of us. Just like Hearst and Pulitzer can't tell us what to do.
Yeah, that's right.
No way.
I thought I told you to get out of here, kids. Get out of here. Go. Scram. He's swinging that billy club again. Run for it.
Police used to treat him with kid gloves, but now they quickly move on the strikers. They're not afraid to rough him up a bit either. The New York strike is spreading to other nearby cities, too. Newsies are walking out in sympathy in Rochester, in New Haven, Fall River, and Providence. Angry letters are arriving at newspaper offices by the sackful, and circulations are plunging. Readers are not happy. At the World offices, Pulitzer checks in again with his business operations executive.
Let's tell the kids we'll consider putting the price back depending on sales levels at the end of the year. How about that?
I understand, sir, but you should really see the mail we're getting. A traitor to the children of America, that's how one reader put it.
That's not fair. I mean, we gave these boys a lifeline. A lot of them walked off steamships and started delivering our paper.
But things are changing, sir. People are starting to talk about child labor protections.
I would have been grateful for a job like this at their age.
We thought of an alternative, Mr. Pulitzer.
The executive proposes recruiting homeless men from the Bowery to deliver the papers. Pulitzer reluctantly agrees to the plan, and Hearst does the same. But down Park Row, in the offices of the New York Journal, Hearst gets his own briefing on the plan a few days later.
The bombs didn't show up.
What? Why not?
It seems they wanted to go easy on the kids. Guess they got a soft heart.
God swallow.
Now we got hundreds walking out all over the city from the Bronx to Brooklyn. Papers are stacked up at the printers.
Okay, I get it. This cannot go on.
With the newsies holding strong, Hearst and Pulitzer reluctantly admit they need to find a different way to cut costs. They can cut staff, reduce the number of foreign correspondents. Pulitzer orders his staff to draft a memo to go out to all distribution centers the following morning. The army of street boys has defeated the titans of the media. When the newsies hear the latest, they gather at the park down the street. Kid Blink steps up on an overturned garbage can to address the faithful. He's waving a sheet of paper and wearing a grin from ear to ear. The newsies gather, looking over their shoulders and keeping watch for the cops. The newsies don't know and don't care how the papers figured out how to balance their budgets.
Boys, it's official. Hearst and Pulitzer just sent word to all the distribution centers. They roll the price back. We stuck it to them, and they'll never forget it.
Yes, right! Way to go!
On August the 2nd, we start back up with the World and the Journal. Just remember, boys, we stick together like glue.
It is an incredible victory, especially for a workforce so young and inexperienced. Beside rolling back the price to 50 cents, Hearst and Pulitzer agree to refund the newsies the cost of each paper they don't sell. But for all their efforts, the triumph won't last. The city is changing and growing rapidly, and in a few years, Hearst, Pulitzer, and their many peers in the newspaper game build corner newsstands. That makes more sense than a bunch of free-roaming newsboys zigzagging through the streets. Even with their victory, the era of the newsie is coming to an end.
Hotel
bad
robbery,
meat family making
barbecue. There's a new headline moving papers these days. It's the arrival of the automobile. And that will put a final end to the newsies.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
On our next episode, Hearst and Pulitzer finally meet face-to-face 5 years after the rival publishers first locked horns in New York. As the 20th century wears on, the encounter will leave both men questioning their choices and their legacies. I'm your host, David Brown. Dade Hayes wrote our story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor, edited and produced by Jenny Lauer, sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producers are Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.